Okay, so if you've listened this far, you might not be the kind of person who feels much affection for fast food. But then again, maybe you do.
When I was in high school, I participated in a locally televised, very low budget, African American history quiz bowl show.
It's Know Your Heritage, the quiz show series that features competing high school students testing their knowledge on African American culture, both past and present.
When my team got their, third or fifth place awards, I remember that a lot of the program was sponsored by a local chapter of the National Black McDonald's Operators Association.
Here's the first question in the category of civil rights for 30. What legislation decreased the migration of blacks,
Valerie,
to the city of Chicago for 30 points? Congratulations, well done.
Years later, when I went to graduate school, I thought how strange it was that my first introduction into a substantive piece of African-American history was by way of Black McDonald's operators.
So, what we're going to ask you, our audience members, to do right now is to stay tuned for that exciting second round coming up next. Stay with us, won't you?
I just found that so fascinating that I started to think more and more about the role of Black franchise owners in the cultural and social life of African Americans.
Know Your Heritage is brought to you by the McDonald's owners of Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana.
For Americans, fast food means different things in different places because of race.
That's historian Marcia Chatelain. Her book, Franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America, is a cultural history of the intersection of fast food, race, and capitalism. It's a fascinating history, and Shannon Henry Kleiber wanted to know more.
Why did McDonald's seek Black franchisees out to replace white ones?
So, a large part of that transition was because of the unrest after 1968 and the assassination of Martin Luther King. There had been conversations throughout the 1960s about the roots of civil unrest, and many people tied it into the fact that in many African American communities, there were a lack of Black-owned businesses. But that was one of many prongs of why people were so frustrated and so upset with the system. And so the push for Black-owned businesses really reached its height in the 1960s when Richard Nixon had initiated a program to promote Black capitalism. And in many African-American neighborhoods, white business owners no longer wanted to do businesses in communities in which they felt like they were the target of animus or criticism or could potentially be the target of property damage for existing in that business. So in many ways, after April 1968, there was this kind of like perfect storm and all these forces are converging. You have a White House that's promoting Black business ownership. You have a mainstream civil rights organization structure that's starting to wonder if economic development should be the next turn in terms of movement activity. And then you have a number of white business owners who want to move to the suburbs. And in this, McDonald's believes that they can possibly maintain their presence and grow it in urban America if they recruit Black franchise owners to their system.
How unusual was McDonald's among fast food restaurants or other national chains in seeking out Black owners?
So in the late 1960s, because of some of the gains of the civil rights movement, there was a growing middle class of African Americans who wanted the experience of consumer citizenship like everyone else. And so a lot of companies started to create advertisements that were supposed to bring in the Black dollar. But what distinguished McDonald's from all of these other attempts is that they saw that if they had Black franchise owners, they could get brand loyalty and recognition among Black consumers. And they took it one step further because they not only were on the forefront of recruiting Black franchise owners, they were also on the forefront of creating ad campaigns that were designed by African-American advertisers and market research firms to connect to Black consumers in their reality, in their context.
What's up, Jay?
What up?
Where's Cap?
At the J-O-B, man.
What?
He's still flipping those burgers at Mickey D's?
Here's your order.
Thanks, Calvin.
And that cultural work I talk about in the book was so important in helping people feel recognized and acknowledged and seen by McDonald's.
Meet the newest member of our management team, Calvin.
Congratulations.
All right,
Calvin.
Man. Right,
manager,
Calvin.
Dude.
Good.
Cool.
Right.
Yep, I'm part of the management team now, mama.
Oh, baby, I'm so proud of you.
You talk about 1968 and the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. as a turning point. Is there a story or an event at a McDonald's that you can tell us about or came from that moment?
Yes. So one of the people I had the pleasure of interviewing was a man named Roland Jones, who was a McDonald's manager in Washington, D.C. And he talked about how immediately after King's death, he saw parts of Washington go up in flames, people taking to the streets, police clashing with civilians. He was sent out to the stores to kind of see their conditions, and he did a pretty good job staving off very angry crowds and getting the McDonald's open again. And so he was recruited by McDonald's corporate to come to Chicago to do the critical work of identifying people who could become Black franchise owners.
I was so surprised in reading your book that if you look at so many civil rights events in America since the 1960s, McDonald's turns out to be the setting, like the 1992 LA riots after the beating of Rodney King and the protests in Ferguson in 2014 after Michael Brown's death. In many cases, the buildings seemed like they were considered safe spaces and in turn spared any kind of destruction or looting. How did that happen? What did McDonald's come to represent?
Well, it's funny. Now that I mention it, you will see it everywhere. McDonald's and chaos kind of go hand in hand in this really strange way. Even if we go before they recruited Black franchise owners after 1968, McDonald's was the site of a lot of civil rights activism about desegregation. In addition, McDonald's as a community anchor has been a reality in a lot of African American communities because they're often the place where people can get first jobs. They're often the site of civic activities like voter registration, like senior citizen hangouts. And the Black franchise owners, because of their kind of unelected role in Black America, that person is often visible to community members as the person donating to historically Black colleges and universities or underwriting local youth sports. And so McDonald's believes that that presence has inoculated it from being targets in moments like the 1992 uprising and moments like the Ferguson uprising. And while that's not entirely accurate, I think is a really powerful way of understanding that, again, fast food is a quotidian part of our life, but boy, does it mean different things to different people.
What did the franchises mean for Black capitalism? And you also talk about disaster capitalism, too, in the book. What are those two kinds of capitalism?
After King's assassination in 1968, people become very invested in the idea of Black capitalism because they're just so exhausted in seeing these historic pieces of legislation that are supposed to guarantee civil rights and that are supposed to guarantee voting rights and are supposed to end housing discrimination not necessarily yield significant changes in the quality of people's lives. And so the idea is, well, maybe we should just pivot towards business. Maybe this is a moment for us to think about making money. And in similar ways, disaster capitalism is about people having to engage what I see as a lack of choices and options. And so disaster capitalism is about these moments in which some type of natural disaster or some type of social disaster leads to a moment where corporations and businesses can kind of take over. They can privatize, they can capitalize on these great tragedies. And so some people argue that Hurricane Katrina was a moment that allowed for a kind of disaster capitalism to evolve, and you see the privatization of the public school system. And so all of this is to say that in this period after 1968, where African Americans are legally protected in some ways, but they aren't getting access to the Great Society programs that are starting to wither, and the focus on poverty has shifted because of the Vietnam War, there's very little left. And that void is filled by businesses like McDonald's that are suggesting that they can deliver the needs of a community that have been left behind by the state.
Yeah, it's so interesting as you track the public and private interactions and how McDonald's as a private organization had kind of an outsized role in things that you think of as public responsibility. They were one of the only places some people could find internet access. I thought that was striking.
Oh, absolutely. And in some places, I used to live in Oklahoma, and in some places in kind of a more rural part of Oklahoma, the McDonald's is also where you can get air conditioning if your air conditioning goes out. So these multiple roles, socially and politically and culturally, of a McDonald's, I think, is important to recognize, because so much of the interventions about food choices and health and nutrition minimize the fact that fast food isn't just about the food. It's about memory. It's about nostalgia. It's about feelings of connection. It's about a lot of complicated emotions.
Hi, good to see you. May I help you?
Two Big Macs and a chocolate shake.
Would you like some French fries with your order, sir?
That be three filet, two cheeseburgers, and four Cokes.
Good morning, sir. May I take your order, please?
You have just one life to live. The greatest gift is the smile you give to your brother.
What parallels can we learn from as we navigate so many of today's challenges? What's happening today that we can look back on the history of McDonald's and gain some understanding from?
We have to understand that the roots of unrest have been identified, have been narrated for generations. There is nothing new about people taking to the streets in protest and in anger. There's nothing new about property damage. And unfortunately, there's nothing new about police brutality. So we have a long history of people identifying what the problem is. What we don't have is a rich history of us being creative on how we solve these problems. The idea that more Black businesses will mediate the real problems of racist violence is kind of a ridiculous idea. And I think in this moment, we have to remember that we actually have public resources still, that we don't necessarily have to default to corporate solutions, that we have power within our own communities to find ways to get people the things that they need. And I really, really hope that we see this moment as an awakening to turn toward each other to solve our problems, than believing that we have to wait for corporate sponsorship or underwriting in order to do it.
That's Marcia Chatelain, author of Franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America. And she was talking with Shannon Henry Kleiber.